As he trotted up the road, the magnificent Krecke carried his assault rifle by its plastic pistol grip, with his trigger finger braced outside the trigger guard, just behind the thick curve of the 30-round magazine. The rifle's fire selector switch was on full auto. The Carney Master was ready to whipsaw with hot lead anything that moved among the seemingly endless ranks of tree trunks. But nothing moved on either side of him, nor on the road ahead. Not yet, anyway. Even after his eyes had become adjusted to the forest's darkness, the road before him was dim. 50 feet ahead, it blended in with the dismal shadows. There were a few bright patches where sunlight penetrated, but they actually made things worse, making the surrounding shade seem even darker. That's why he had brought Jackson along. What the little sticky couldn't see, it could sniff out. He had reeled in all but 5 feet of Jackson's leash, keeping the mutant on a short lead. He kept the rest of the chain coiled in reserve. He could pay it out if the creature made a sudden lunge and still keep the sticky under control. Sensing the excitement of his trainer and the impending bloodshed, Jackson was no longer the singing, dancing puppet that so fascinated the Hicks. Hunting, the real Jackson, the pure sticky, bubbled to the surface. The raw chiller instinct that could never be beaten away. Eyes bulging, whipcord muscles straining, needle teeth bared, it was the perfect sticky on the prowl, a thing that drops from a tree limb into your path, with sucker-tipped fingers reaching for your face. As the Carney Master and Jackson rounded a turn, the sticky made a sudden surge forward. It dropped onto all fours and scrabbled madly at the dirt, trying to break free, straining at the chain. The prey was close, very close. It was hard for Krecke to hold the thing back. To get its full attention and cooperation, Krecke had to forcefully apply the butt of the M16. Twice. He then drew his men together on the right side of the road. They were all breathing hard and dripping with sweat. They weren't scared, though. These were hard-eyed, hard-bitten, long-time professional chillers. They had willingly dug mass graves, administered mercy bullets, and robbed the huts of the still-warm dead. They'd gotten all pumped up for the big chilling at Bullard, but had been denied their fun and their spoils. And now they wanted payback.
From the way the Sticky's acting, looks like Carter and company are waiting for us up around the next bend. They've probably got both sides of the road covered, expecting us to walk into their sights. Not gonna happen that way, though.
The Carney Master drew a rough sketch in the dirt with a fingertip. It showed the right-hand turn in the road that they could see from where they stood. He pointed at the three best shots of his crew. Each had a high-capacity semi-auto hand blaster.
I want you to sneak up to the edge of the bend on this side of the road. Don't show yourselves until you hear the first shots. Then move out around the curve and nail anyone running down the road.
He tapped the point of the curve.
From this spot, you've got control of the KZ. If no one breaks and runs, locate the shooters in the cover on the left side. For sure, they'll be pot-shotting at us from across the road. Pin them down and chill them.
Krecke waved for the other men to huddle even closer.
The rest of us are going to work our way through the brush and get behind the shooters on the right. It's going to be tough for us to move quietly through all the fallen branches. Go slow and watch your step until we're in position. When I give the attack signal, we'll charge them from the rear. The more noise we make, the better. And either we kill the bastards outright or drive them onto the road, where they can be picked off easy by our sharpshooters.
The mutie was quivering head to foot with excitement. That wouldn't do. Not at all. The Carney Master showed the sticky the rifle butt. Jackson immediately dropped to its back in the dirt and offered its trainer its soft underbelly.
That's better.
Krecke unclipped the chain from the choke collar and pointed at his heel. The little thing meekly obeyed. Krecke shouldered his M16, then stepped off the road and into the trees. The thick, rough bark trunks were unevenly spaced. Some grew only inches apart, while others were a double arm's length from their closest neighbor. Blocked from sunlight, most of the lower branches had withered and fallen off. Around the base of each tree was a ring of rotting debris, a rat's nest of dusty needles, twigs, and small and large limbs. Some of these brush piles stood as high as Krecke's waist. By staying as close as possible to the trunks, he avoided most of the tinder dry material. He was forced to advance at a snail's pace, watching the placement of each step, occasionally towing a rotted branch out of the way when he couldn't safely see past it. The 9 Carney chillers moved in a widely spaced line behind him. They followed his trail exactly, keeping close to the tree trunks, stepping in his steps. Because they were pros at chilling and stalking, they made only the slightest rustling noise as they advanced. Krekka could hardly hear it over the thudding of his own pulse. The Carney Master couldn't see the road now, but he knew that he had to be close, no more than 20 or 40 feet away. He also knew that he had to be just about on top of Cotter and the other ambushers, if they were really there. As he paused for a moment, his back pressed to a tree trunk, Jackson started acting nervous. The expression on the little sticky's face said it was trying hard to keep quiet, but couldn't. Cotter was near, all right. Krekka turned around the trunk, holding the assault rifle at his hip, his finger lightly resting on the trigger. He brought down his right foot. With the weapon poised, he froze, scanning the row of trees in the gloom directly ahead. He saw nothing and was about to make another jump forward when, not 10 feet away, leaning against the base of a tree, he caught the shape of the scoped Steyr long blaster. A jolt of adrenaline coursed through his veins. Before he could get out a warning shout, a hand appeared from under the pile of debris, grabbed the sling, and snatched the Steyr away.
Get him!
Ryan lay burrowed under a brush pile with a peekaboo view of the empty road. From his position, he couldn't see any of the others on the opposite side. The heat under the debris was sweltering. Beads of sweat ran down his spine and trickled in rivulets over the sides of his ribcage. Dust mixed with body oils and perspiration had turned the backs of his hands ash gray. Ever since he and the others had taken cover, he'd been counting the elapsed time in his head. He had figured it would take the chillers maybe 4 minutes to close the quarter-mile gap. They should have been in his sights more than 2 minutes ago. With every second that passed, his concern grew. It wasn't a sudden noise that first alerted him to the danger they were in. It was an awareness, a vague presence from behind. He'd been counting on the dry deadfall to give them plenty of advance warning of an enemy approach. Listening hard, he could hear rustling not 20 feet away. The enemy was closing in, and there had been no alarm. He picked up a twig and flicked it at JB to get his attention. The armorer immediately reached over and nudged Jack, who turned to look Ryan's way. Doc looked at him too, but his eyes were unfocused. Ryan emphatically jerked a thumb toward the woods behind them. They'd been foxed. JB's jaw dropped in disbelief, but he recovered quickly, grimacing as he thumbed his wire-rimmed glasses back up the bridge of his nose. Ryan pointed across the road toward Mildred and Christie's position. JB and Jack nodded in agreement. The ambush was scrapped. They had to rejoin their forces, and quickly. Ryan gathered up his extra mags and tucked them inside his waistband. As he started to reach back to grab the Steyr, a branch cracked 10 feet away. No way was he going to leave his precious sniper rifle behind. He caught hold of the long blaster by its shoulder sling and jerked it away from the tree, using his momentum to roll up onto his knees.
Get him!
Then all the chillers crashed through the brush. Ryan brought up the SIG. He couldn't make out any targets, but returned fire, spraying a line of 9mm depth in front of him at waist height. Behind him, the rocking boom of JB's scattergun was followed by the roar of Jack's 357 Magnum blaster. The yelling abruptly stopped. The attackers broke off their charge and took cover. Ryan waved for Jack, JB, and Doc to beat feet. He caught up to them as they reached the road. As they started to cross, three Rousties appeared around the bend and, dropping to kneeling positions, opened fire on them.
Go! Go!
They returned fire on the run. The roustabout on the far right took a slug very low in the chest. It blew him off his pins, lifting and slamming the man onto his back. He clawed at his guts as the companions dove into the cover of the trees. Blaster fire from Christie, Dean, and Mildred sent the two survivors scurrying back around the bend.
Frog it!
That was their signal for a full-out fighting retreat. The two groups would retreat by leapfrogging each other, one group defending the bend, while the other ran up the straightaway to take up a firing position at the next turn. They were already in high gear up the road by the time the chillers got themselves reorganized. As they withdrew, the companions used sparse blaster fire to keep the opposition back at least 100 feet. They wanted to stall the enemy until they could reach a place they could successfully defend, using as little ammo as possible. JB didn't shoot at all, trying to keep Doc moving uphill.
God damn it, old man! Snap out of it!
As Ryan raced past Mildred, she knelt at the side of the road and fired her target pistol from a braced stance. As Ryan made the next bend in the road, bullets spanged into the surrounding trunks and clipped off branches. The road above them continued to wind back and forth among the dark trunks. There was no choice but to keep on running until they reached the summit, which he knew couldn't be far away now. Then the opposition shooting slowed. A moment later, the shooting stopped altogether. Ryan knew the chillers were concentrating on closing the distance before the companions could reach the high ground.
Forget the frog! Straight to the top! Triple fast!
Ryan sent JB, Doc, and Jack up ahead of him. The albino grabbed Doc under one armpit, and JB took the other. They half-carried the old man as they ran. After three more bends, the track straightened. Ryan could see the light breaking through the tops of the trees. The road rose even more steeply as it approached the summit. By the time he reached the edge of the tree line, Mildred, Christy, and Jack were on their bellies on the crown of the road, sighting their hand blasters down the straight stretch. He moved past them and joined JB, who was already doing a wreck of the summit. There was no hard sight for them to defend. The crest of the summit was rock, but was as flat as a pancake. The densely forested ridge bracketed the top of the road, which continued steeply down on the other side of the crest.
This is bad.
Bastard bad.
The chillers could filter through the ridgetop trees and flank them if they tried to make a stand on the summit.
Get up! We can't stay here! We've got to keep running! Cross the summit and take the road down the other side!
150 feet below him, at the start of the straightaway he just climbed, four Rousties tried to cross the road. In a single fluid movement, Ryan shouldered the Steyr, dropped the safety, and snap-fired. A heavy-caliber bullet skipped harmlessly off the road between the carnies, but the near miss made them throw themselves headfirst into the brush. Ryan broke from the crest and ran after the others. As he sprinted down the descending road, he got his first glimpse of the little lake. It looked like a pre-dark painting or advertisement. Serene, pastoral, inviting. What appeared to be steam or fog hung over part of its mirror-like surface. With chillers at his back, though, Ryan had no time to examine the placid panorama. He raced to catch up with his companions, who were already nearing the muddy shore.